1, 3, 2, 1.
What?
1, 3. You counted down 1, 3, 2, 1.
I didn't know how to count today.
That sounds like a problem.
I'm trying my best to learn how to math, and here you are speaking poorly on my ability to do so.
That's because, you know, math.
But he does. It's fucking math. Hi, Bob. I'm Rance.
Hi, Rance. I'm Bob.
And this is the Quarantine Book Club. Before we get started, I need to give a big old shout out to my boy, Mick Arcade, who not only just gave me another subscription. Thank you, my friend. But also, I think named our title, our episode for the night, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Could you please act out the name of the episode? Could you do your best Freddy Krueger voice and give it to me?
I'm your boyfriend now, Rancy.
That's such a good name. It's such a good name. Hey, everybody in the chat. Ebon Flight. Wolf. What's going on, you guys? How are you? How are you feeling tonight? Thanks for coming by and hanging out with us. We are going to... Doll Steak. What up, Doll Steak? Who I also need to give some shout-outs to, too. But before we talk about the fucking book...
Uh-huh.
We need to talk about some other shit.
Okay.
Like this weekend.
Oh, man, this weekend was fun. It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad it's over.
That it? Is that it? Bob, could you... Second.
Yeah.
Glad it's over, Bob.
Because it's a lot of damn stress, man. This weekend, we did...
Now, I want you to talk about it more softly for me, please.
Okay.
And closer to the mic, please.
Can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear my laundry that's going in the background?
No, I can't. Awesome. I can't.
There are 8 more minutes, so please just bear with me for 8 more goddamn minutes. But look, this weekend we did the Evil Dead Pay to Spray Splatathon live here on Twitch on Violence Obscene's channel. It was a game show experience that we built from the ground up. And I gotta tell you, friends,
cobbled together with our buttholes.
It was beautiful, but when you spend an entire day writing questions, 50 questions for a quiz show, and your acting friends all just decide they're not actually going to play the quiz show, they're just going to all answer stupid idiot answers, it makes you feel really sad. Like you didn't do your best. But that's okay, because you know who did do their best? The community of people that watched us.
My God. Could you repeat the question really quick, Mick Arcade asks?
I'll repeat something. I'll repeat, fuck you, Mick Arcade.
Hey, yeah, like, this community of people, man, like, we, so I want to, I was thinking, I'm going to write something up still. I haven't gotten it, but, like.
Same, man, it's been, and I haven't had a break since this weekend either.
You guys, and I'm specifically calling out Mick Arcade, Ebon Flight, Hecate, Doll Steak, Wolf, of course, because you were
I got
there.
These burgers.
I got these burgers. Like,
wow.
You guys decided to donate, and you literally are able to keep the show. You guys are the reason we're able to keep the show alive for now.
Yeah. In doing the math, it looks like we didn't hit our goal, but that's okay, because that goal was sort of like pie in the sky. It was like best case scenario, and with like a little bit of out of pocket and some like, fudging around money here and there from
basically
different,
laundering money from the Mexican drug cartel.
Yes, exactly. I can make it work, and we can make this thing survive till next year. Yeah. There'd be some ways to make it like easier, but I mean, I'm super happy. I don't think I expected anything like this.
No, you guys kick ass. You made sure that we could continue doing this for a 6 year
and
next year.
I'm endlessly grateful. I really am. I'm not slinging dope right now, but
Bob was slinging dope. Ebon Flight wants feet pics from you.
Why?
Because
I do want to do. I'm going to start an OnlyFans, but it's just going to be like weird dad bods.
Give me feet pics. But because our friend Doll Steak is in there, I'm not going to call you daddy. Give me feet pics, because I know she doesn't like it when people call daddy. She gets raged out, which I understand. She's like,
Doll Steak, don't kink shame. Some people are into it.
No, it's not. It's not even that. It's like, no. Creepy. Yeah, what? Man.
I mean, some people like to call those people daddy. That's Bob, their prerogative.
I want you to do that for me.
Hey, daddy.
No, I hate that.
Daddy, can you show me your nipples?
I fucking hate you. So yeah, I'm leaving. Oh, Evan Flipe, thanks for those bits, man. You were the best. We had a great time this weekend. I'm also glad it's over though, because Jesus, I was still grinding like food coloring off my body.
Oh, dude. You're a son of a bitch.
Why?
Because you got a cup of slime dumped on you last week.
Yep.
You took the container of slime, which was close to like a gallon container, and you poured fake blood into it to make it worse. And the whatever that makes up that slime was in my hair all night.
It congealed and it had formed.
Oh, dude, I did. I got so railed. I felt like I felt like I was talking to Cardi B and she was on her period. It was like a real bloody WAP moment.
I did. Everybody is talking about that song, and I have never heard it.
Yeah, that fucking song, it fucks, dude.
Does it really?
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I love it.
I want to listen to an 8-bit version before I hear that version. That's how I listen to all new music.
No, dude.
I listen to an 8-bit version first because I'm gonna like the tune, and then I listen to the real one. That's how I got.
Can you just listen to a song about a woman being openly sexual and taking command of her sexuality?
Yes, but it's gotta be a good song.
Listen to the goddamn song. It is a good song.
Okay, that's cool. All right.
It's on like near repeat when Mrs. Design and I go out. It's like on repeat in the car.
Dahlstick says she has heard at least 8 seconds of it, which puts her way past where I am right now. Yep. Way past where I am. Hey, by the way, go your Corona tonight.
Same to you, buddy. Oh, what's that? Look. Nightmare Fetty keeps coming through behind me.
Nightmare Fetty?
Yeah.
That is that it? Nightmare
That's
Fetty.
It's a Nightmare Fetty.
Wait, is that like a fake? Is that like a Robert Cop of
Yes, exactly. It's the Robert Cop of Nightmare on Elm Street.
We should make sure that Mick Arcade gets himself a Nightmare Fetty, because he was doing so. Mad props to Mick Arcade, who was doing a something I only knew tangentially, and then I finally got a chance to catch it. He does a action figure collecting podcast, and he recorded one of the episodes on Twitch the other day.
Why do I not know about this already? Why do I not know about this? What's it called?
Is Mick Arcade very soft about his accomplishment? Mick Arcade, I need you to be loud about him.
I need you to tell me about it so I can listen to it. Mick Arcade, I need you to link it in the chat.
It's really good too.
I need that right now so I can click on it so I can listen to that on the way to work tomorrow. Before I listen to whatever our next book that I've got lined up for us.
This is the next book.
I want to talk about this book, man.
So we were talking about A Sleep at the Wheel by Brian Hodge, which a very cool thing happened to us today.
Yeah, really cool.
We got retweeted. Well, no, not retweeted. We got tweeted at.
Yeah.
By the author. Who asked us to go kindly on him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was like, you Mick did Arcade. Mick Arcade.
Yes. Mick Arcade, link your podcast in the chat.
Yes, do it, Mick Arcade. Tigga, what's going on, buddy? So he tweeted us today. We said we were going to read Brian, and I found him. I'm trying to tag these authors, and I was like, we're going to read Brian Hodge's Asleep at the Wheel, A Nightmare on Elm Street tale. And he was like, oh my God, that's a blast from the past. Please be kind to me.
Ancient history is what
ancient
he said.
History.
And I meant to tweet back to him to be careful, because I was going to say you need to be careful because Violence Obscene likes to challenge other writers.
I should. Well, Mr. Hodge, if you're out there, while I'm happy to fight you, I don't feel the need to. And I have a reason why tonight, because I'm giving Mr. Hodge an award.
All right. Tonight. Okay.
I don't want to get there yet, but I'm giving him an award tonight. And it's not about his writing quality. It's something else entirely. So
hold on. Oh, there it went. There was my laundry.
Oh, good. Your laundry's done.
It's done. No.
Congratulations. In the chat cool. is Mick Arcade's Conversations with the Beard,
okay.
which is his podcast about action figure collecting. So if you are listening to this podcast now after it's on Twitch, please look up. I believe it is on SoundCloud, Conversations with the Beard.
It's on Stitcher.
On Stitcher. Okay.
And I pulled it up so I can listen to it tomorrow. Cool. Thanks, Mick. Love
you. Cool, cool. Check out our friend Mick.
The two episodes titled The Hunt.
Are the most recent ones.
That I think he's saying those are the ones he's on.
Oh, okay. The beard is named Jamal. Kate,
man, my internet is really bad tonight, by the way. Like, my stream looks horrible.
It might actually just be fine. Who knows? I didn't change the bitrate back from this weekend.
It looks not
Does it
good?
Look all right, people?
I don't know. I mean, on my computer, it looks like we were made of fuzz.
That happens sometimes. It's fine. It's me. It's cool. My fucking cool, fault. Cool. So let's talk. I want to talk about this story, you guys.
Okay. Tell me about your story, bro.
No, this story. But I have some things that happened to me. So tell me how your week went. I want to hear about your week first. Then you can ask about mine. Then we'll get to Mr. Hodge apostrophe S story.
Okay. I mean, I could tell you that, I had a great time this weekend. I got covered with blood in the Evil Dead Splatathon. But I also am really excited because now, since then, it means that I have time to open up. You okay?
I'm fine.
Okay. For other projects, you okay?
Bro, I'm okay.
Are you fine?
Bro, I'm good.
Okay, cool. I have time to work.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Are you okay?
Okay. Yeah, dude. You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So I did
reference, by the way. You get a fucking high five for me. So.
If you get that reference, if I'm not subbed to your channel, I will immediately after this is over go to your channel and sub. But like this week was really tough getting there. Oh, I also I went to storage because I went to storage in between the 2 weeks of the show to drop off some things that we weren't using this week. I moved some things out of the way. Went back there on Mick Arcade, that is wrong. Went to.
It is not a reference to Wet Hot American Summer. It is a reference. I'm going to give somebody a hint. It's a reference to an industrial.
Yes, I went back to our storage to like drop some stuff off, and then on Sunday when I went in to bring everything, or Saturday, yeah, no, Sunday morning when I went back to like start dropping stuff off from our loadout, I had just left two set pieces sitting out in the middle of the storage space.
They were still there?
Yeah. It was too like half walls.
Oh, that's really that shows where your brain was.
It was not in great place.
I heard you hit a fucking awesome milestone this week. Yeah, I think you need to say it.
I don't even remember what I did, man.
A personal milestone, a big fucking thing. You've been working on it with your body.
Oh, I already screwed that up.
Oh, well. I broke
200 pounds.
Congratulations.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks. I appreciate it. I went back up to 202 because the human body fluctuates 5 pounds
you
on a daily basis.
Did you eject enough shit out of your body?
No. And that's probably part of my weight loss plan is I just like take huge shits and I'm like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey,
you gotta flex that dumper.
You only weigh yourself after you've taken a poop.
Can we look really quick at my little thing where my cord was? It looked like my body was sliced in half. Do you see where the cord is?
Yeah, no, why this looks it looks horrible, man.
It's because of that. No, that's your fucking computer doing that.
Okay, cool. I just gotta refresh it. I'll refresh it. I'll lose all. You sure it's not just the internet that like from this weekend where everything was broken because our stream just shit itself.
I have a quality of excellent right now.
Okay, cool.
Quality of fucking excellent.
I love you. We're just spending all this time bitching and stuff. Tell me about your week, man. Because I mean, honestly, my week was it was the Splatathon, and it was getting ready for that, and going in between the 2 weeks of stuff.
I'm working again. I was told by my work that arbitrarily I need to return to work at the work. Mm-hmm. That's smart. No, I won't be doing.
I'm gonna need you to come into work,
and I'm like, no, but like the idea is, I'm like, but literally, I do my job better from home, and I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, guys, this whole thing isn't just because I love it for fun. I also teach from this spot, and I do a fucking great job of it. My whole life has been like wrapped around it, and they're like,
we're gonna need you to come back into work to teach.
And I'm like, no, you know what? Because
nobody else is fucking there. You literally have me sit in a goddamn classroom with my computer to stare at a fucking bunch of little boxes on the screen.
Why don't you get a job as a... Why don't you get a job,
fucking
loser?
I got a fucking job. Get a job.
Why don't you get a job? Why don't you get a job at a college that does only... Like one of those... You can learn this online,
you know,
and
what?
That online.
That's a great fucking idea. I'll be like, I'm going to set you all up.
Yeah.
I've traveled around and set your bullshit up.
Yeah.
y'all need it. What if we burn? I'm thinking about it. No, that's not a real threat if you're here for my job. But yeah, so I'm like, no, I'm just, why?
I don't know.
No, give me a reason, not arbitrary bullshit. Like, don't just say ELL return. Like, give me a fucking reason. Like,
they want you to know that little kids need you to teach them in person.
But they're not even there. They're at home.
I know.
Like, what? So there's that.
Because they want to know that they're getting everything that they're paying you for.
Yes,
and the parents, it's the parents. The fucking parents want to know. They want to be like, oh, well, we're paying for these teachers' salaries, so they should be in the classroom teaching.
By the way, if y'all ever happen to send your kid to private school, don't be a fuckhole.
That's what you can
don't
do.
Don't be a fuckhole. But I did buy an Oculus Quest because I wanted to escape reality enough without drugs and or alcohol.
Neat. I like it. I like it in its show off spot back there.
I bought that for the show off spot. Sorry, I'm trying to get it. And I fucking love it.
Cool.
I was so afraid that when I was going to play it, that one, I was going to get suddenly motion, which I almost did.
Were you spinning in circles?
No. So it's a lot of the games are like stationary, right? Like even, you know, have the button that like teleports for it, and that's fine. But I did play a game where you move with the thumbsticks like on a controller, but also you can look around. I had to eliminate my motion sickness by walking in place. because it was the only way that I could emulate, like, okay. So that's cool though. Like it was $2.99.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had that much fun. My wife, yo, Gabe and Kayo, thank you, my friend. I love this content too. Yo, thanks for that sub, Gabe and Kayo. Wonderful man. Check out Gabe and Kayo. He is a gem.
I do check him out. I wish he would stand up and turn around more. That's how much I want to check him out.
Thank you, Gabe and Kayo. It was the most fun I've had playing video games in a while. And awesome. I was standing downstairs on Friday, and I turned it on and I put it on. And my wife just heard me because I'm sitting there with a foam square in VR just going. And I was giggling. I started crying because I had such childlike joy.
Oh, you're a little child, baby.
I was pulling like rockets and like you pull a little tab out of the rocket and let it go. And like I was making punching bags and then I was dancing with this guy.
Yeah, definitely a guy.
He was a robot.
Oh, okay. A robot.
And I had such a good time. And so I'm gonna be one of those people now who's like, you know, it's $2.99. If you can happen to get your hands on the Oculus, that shit. Because it's both its own console and one that you can hook up to the
computer. Is Oculus Carmack? Is Oculus the company that Carmack took over?
Well, it's the company that founded and then Facebook purchased.
Oh, okay. All right.
Everybody's bitching and complaining about the Facebook, like, invasiveness of it. Not once. I literally signed in with my Facebook account, and I said, don't fucking post anything. There you go.
I signed it. That's what I do with, like, a lot of things.
That's all it was. So, you know what?
I don't care. The entire world knows everything about me. It's fine.
Seriously. It's so dumb. Hey, Arsenic, I'm sorry. I didn't get a chance to say hi to you. I didn't say we. The anonymous us will burn out. Yes, I got that. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it.
Cool, man.
Also, I sweat my balls off when I do it, and I hide under things.
Like your couch? No, I don't understand.
Like, so I'm playing super hot, which is shoot.
Okay.
But the whole world is traversable, depending upon how wide your little, like, play area is. And you have this thing called a guardian boundary, called the guardian boundary. And if you begin getting close to that boundary, it will show up in the game to be like, hey, you're getting out of your safe area, so don't, like, fucking punch a TV or anything.
So you don't run into a wall or something,
Mm-hmm. So I'm.
I like how mine's. I run into a wall. Yours is like high money damage of punching your TV.
But like anything in the world, you can interact with. Like, there's like this desk, and like super hot is this game where nothing moves unless you do.
Right. The kids have been playing it on like
and watching a bullet stuff. Come at me, and I'm like, like hide underneath it, and then I come back up. But it's really like I've never had it. I actually never had a real interest.
I have wanted VR for my PlayStation for about like 5 years, and I've never pulled the trigger on it. And now I'm like, oh, I guess it's a little too late because we're about to move on to PS5
right now. Well, fuck it. And that's the one thing I wish this. I wish you. Arsenic and Old Game says that Unicornucopia, her wonderful husband, says, oh, that's what Bob looks like.
Yeah, a real fucking idiot. Bob looks like a fucking asshole. And my name is Bob, and I approve this message. Oh my God, yeah, we're just blasting through, like, talking about other shit, and that's totally fine, because this podcast can be about whatever you want it to be.
It can be about whatever you want it to be, whatever you need it to be.
Definitely be about talking to all our Twitch friends and not actually worried about making a podcast.
Fuck it!
Because that's way more fun. Except this book was, Uncle Bob was going to say it right out of the bat, this short book, novelette, whatever, was fine.
QBC
it was
approved.
Good.
QBC yeah. approved.
Uh-huh.
Why? Like, let's start right at the bat with the positive. I want to know the positive. I want to know why you thought that.
Because it was a traditional Nightmare on Elm Street story that had its own twist at the end.
Which we need to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. That I didn't hate and I thought was interesting to like think about in the idea of what Freddy's powers are.
Looks at me. Some things.
Yeah, but a horror book based off of a slasher franchise. Also, Nightmare on Elm Street's a little bit of a different slasher franchise. I've always loved that it's got a fantasy aspect to it because of the dream world stuff.
Yes.
That it means that there's almost, in certain situations, you can play with the rules and nobody's going to be pissed about it.
And the rules are always played with in a very modernized kind of way. This isn't, you know, Freddy Krueger, the sick fucker that he is. The way that he manipulates dreams is never with this, like it is dark and violent, but it's always with this like twisted clown touch.
Yeah, and a sense of weird dark humor.
Yeah, and it's bad humor. It's not even good. Yeah. And I feel like this story captured the heart of what I remember Nightmare on Elm Street to be, brought forward a different perspective on the tropes that are established in that universe. Mm-hmm. Honored Robert Englund's performance of Freddy, and fit really well into the world in this strangely perverse mythological way too.
Mm-hmm. And it was one of the things like specifically about like a lot of the kills.
Yes, unlike our last story. This story.
Yeah.
I was all into the kills. I was like, yo, this is creative. This is Freddy.
That was it. It was creative. And there was not a lot of like Freddy just walking in. I mean, there was some hands-on, but there wasn't like a lot of like Freddy just walking in and being like, I'm going to slash you with my claws. Now you're dead. It was more like, I'm going to do a creative thing to you. Maybe I'll come in and get involved personally. But I'm also just I'm making a thing happen to you, because that's what a lot of what Freddy does too, is like he just creates these situations that are based on the person's like
their psyche fears. And their unconscious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that they think about at various times during the day. Yeah. So what is the plot of this? Let's talk about that. I'm intrigued by it. And I do have to say,
Mr. Hodge, if you're out there, any criticisms we may offer come from a place of love.
seriously, man, don't worry about it. First of all, we love you.
Very much so. In fact, I am going to.
Okay. You're going to tweet him and tell him, hey, what's up?
I
send him a kiss.
I would like to congratulate Mr. Brian Hodge on being the least biggest piece of shit that we've had as an author on our podcast and his work. So if you get a chance, check out Brian Hodge, one of the more popular supernatural horror authors still currently writing in the genre. He is also not a conservative piece of shit. So this goes out to you, Mr. Hodge. Thank you so much. This is love for you. And I want to make sure that people know that your books are worth reading, because you yourself are a progressive minded, fantastic soul based on what I can tell from everything that I've researched on the internet. So thank you for being you, and enjoy the show.
I also think he's got a podcast. He's definitely been like promoting a podcast or something. Maybe. I don't know. I was looking at his Twitter a little bit. It was, again, I've had like a day, so I couldn't like, yeah. I was like, oh, he replied to us. And then I was like, check out his Twitter. Hey man, you want to be on the show? No, I don't want to be on your show. I won't reply to you for that. Bye.
Guys writing stuff about how incels suck and like how wear a fucking mask. Like, I'm like, you know what? I like this guy.
The story was good. It starts with Ian, our main character Ian, who tells the story in first-person perspective, which is interesting right off the bat, because when you have a person telling a story in first-person perspective, that gives you a mindset that, the person is going to make it through the story. And weirdly, he does, but weirdly, but with a little asterisk on it. And he's
there's a bit of like the Sisyphusian curse in
there.
Like needing to repeat the same horror for an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah,
sort of looked distantly to the side.
Sorry, work tried to
get on your shit.
No, it's fine. It's actually,
are they going to let you wear jeans though? Hey, because that's what my job's going to do. You can wear jeans.
You see this paint? Like stained shirt. Yeah. This is what I wore to work today. Okay, really, I work in a private school, but like people expect me to be. I actually look really rednecky today, which is weird.
I believe in you. It's fine.
Thanks, I appreciate it. So this band full of people have moved into the infamous Nancy Thompson's house, and Nancy Thompson is your last girl from Friday the 13th. I think Friday the 13th too. She dies in and out of the series eventually. I don't know whether she's alive or not in canon anymore. But Heather Langenkamp. And, you know, one of the few like horror protagonists that also makes it through a large part of the series that they keep coming back to, other than like Jamie Lee Curtis, like in Friday the 13th, I could not tell you most of, except for Tina from part six, I couldn't tell you most of the last girl's names.
No.
And
Nancy's the only one that I really like am familiar with. And this is, I presume, in the canon of this world, in the canon of this story. So this was this was collected in an anthology that was released in 1991. And I can't remember. It was before
New Nightmare.
So it was, they were just like, hey, we're going to put this out there. Collected these seven stories. And this one takes place. Nancy is dead. The band that Ian is involved is the front man for is called what is it?
The Nancy Thompson Dream Watch.
Nancy Thompson Grave Watch.
Grave Watch.
And it's, they do nothing special other than like they're inspired in a very like a Trent Reznor pig kind of way by 1428 Elm Street, which is where Nancy, you know, all the shit happened. So they're like, ooh, we're gonna like do a show at her house and. You know, it's going to get spooky. Go ahead. Anyway,
I mean, they lived in her house and they're like, hey, we're taking all of this. We're going to what's the word I'm looking for? Channel the energy of this house, like psychologically, basically it's going to inspire us to write our music. Really. That's what they're saying. And Ian has developed the ability to lucidly dream. So he says he can control his dreams right at the beginning of the story, but he starts having a conversation with Nancy in the kitchen.
Yes.
In one of his dreams. And then he starts to go down the stairs and she's like, don't go. And he's like, I don't fucking believe in you. And I don't believe in Freddy Krueger. And then he starts going down the stairs. Everything starts going wrong and he can't control it. And then he wakes up and it turns out he's been sleepwalking.
Here's the thing though, I will say that did bother me throughout the course. Is exactly what you said there, and it's one of my only issues, is that Ian says, look, I can control my dreams. I don't believe, however, in Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. But he believes well enough in Nancy Thompson to have a fucking band that's like that's basically a tribute band to her. So like that was weird to me because it's like, okay, so you believe the victim exists, but you think that she's like a victim of something else, and Or is he compressing and hiding and denying his belief of Freddy Krueger?
I think he's denying it because if you're thinking about some of the mythos a little bit, if if he just doesn't believe in Freddy, he's got less of a chance of like being attacked by him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a level of deep-seated belief or possibility somewhere. And it's actually funny that we can even have this conversation about a slasher horror book. Thank you, Mr. Hodges.
Oh, as far as I think, Mr. as far Hodge? As Mr. Hodge, Mr. Hodge. Mr. Hodge. Yes, Mr. Hodge. Not Hodges, Mr. Hodge.
Hodge.
As far as stories go, short stories go, too, that are seated in a slasher world, I think there's also a lot of philosophical implications. I was literally thinking of, like, themes that are present throughout the story as we were moving forward. It is this band. You have some of their characters, and I'm going to say the characters are throwaway. They're band members, and they are you have Ian, who's your front man, and he's a bit of a weirdo. He loves projecting basically Nine Inch Nails style.
Ian's me when we were in a band.
Yes, he's 100% you. He's like, you know, behind us, I put a projection up of like, and he says specifically, do you remember what he says he was inspired by?
Didn't he say he was inspired by Nine Inch Nails?
Mm-mm.
I forget.
He was inspired by Faith No More.
Oh, right. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh yeah, baby. He even takes scenes from the video Epic and slows them down, like of the fish flopping and stuff. And he's like,
yes,
put them in black and white. And it's really funny that there's this.
It's something about leaving band for pussy. There is actually a character who basically almost does that too.
He also, but he's, that's the other thing about this group of band members. There's Riley. Riley is the drummer, right?
No, this is how you know that the character is really memorable.
Yeah.
Not Riley. Rowan.
Rowan.
Okay. So Rowan.
Marmalade.
Marmalade? No, fucking Marley.
Marley. Marley.
Rowan is the drummer.
Marley.
Marley is the keyboardist.
Marley is every keyboardist.
Is every keyboardist. Bad. He's morose.
He's a musician.
He's a musician. Oven. Then we
Luna.
Have Luna, who just loves to fuck.
She's the free spirit who loves to fuck.
And
Pamela? Paula.
Pamela.
Pamela or Pamela?
Yes, okay. Pamela, because she is, there's a lot of references to Jim Morris.
Right, okay. And so.
This is something I want to explore a little bit more when we're talking about our.
Okay. Now. And so each of these characters, first of all, it's funny because they're in sort of like this commune. They're all together. Like they all, one of the funny things is they're like, they all sleep together. There's no couples and nobody has a specific person that they're with. Now, because it's the 90s, don't worry about it. It's only heterosexual stuff. Okay.
But. But Rowan does talk about at one point, like our main character, and I don't Ian. Yeah. I don't really know where this comes by and why it's important. Mm-hmm. One of those things where what I did feel like is I felt like the editor could have like Freddy sliced a lot of this language out.
Yeah,
because there was information I didn't need to know, like that Ian is a he says that at one point that he is a he venerates monogamy, and I was like. I don't fucking give a shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. All right, so you don't. Okay, and I mean it never comes up. The only thing I can, but at the same time, he doesn't, and I'm wondering if maybe it demonstrates his unreliability as a narrator because he does have something sexual, an obsession with Nancy.
Yeah,
there is a sexual drive, even so much so that Pamela, I believe, says to him. Or is it Luna? Says like, no, you're with me.
Yeah, I think
turn your head.
Yeah, I think it was Luna. It was, and that's okay. Like, because it's also not overly
sexualized.
Yeah, it's not like you're bashed over the head with it. And it's not like, yeah, it's fucking horny kids, fucking. It's just, hey, we're a band. We all kind of sleep together because that's just what we do. And
we do a lot of weird multimedia stuff.
Yeah, we're a goth band. We're a goth band who like. There's one thing that I do have to that kills me whenever I read it in a book, and that is it happened also in the Friday the 13th book, and I didn't think to mention it when a author likes certain bands and you know they like them those certain bands themselves.
That Mondo Bizarro band, I remember this Do you remember the line?
I don't.
Mondo Bizarro musicians, those junk culture junkies, the Cramps. That was the description. I literally remember that shit in my head.
There's the one where they're heading to. Oh, sorry, no, you go ahead.
I was driving and I heard Mondo Bizarro junk culture junkies, the Cramps. Oh, Arsenic asked when was this written. It was written 91, about 91. Yep.
Yeah. There's when they talk about going to Athens. Yes, they're Athens, on the way to Georgia. Athens, and they talk about paradise. All these bands that were like from there or thrived there. And then the last band they mentioned, I'm like, who the fuck even is this band?
Oh, yes. The Chainsaw Quintet Sextuplet or something.
Yeah, okay, this is clearly just like one of your favorite bands that nobody knows about.
Mr. Hodge, if you're out there and this is your favorite band, I let us know. Give us a link to a video because I'm curious, but I can't remember what they're called. So.
and I'm not going back to listen to it again.
Yes,
Arsenic, definitely Poppy Z Bright style vibes, where it's like it's the open sexuality, but it's not so over the top that you're like, yo, everybody's just fucking here.
Yeah,
Poppy Z Bright is a little more like everybody's just fucking.
There's
here.
A bit of a certain responsibility, like a social contract responsibility, but in a way where they're not like they're drinking a little bit, but they're not like. They're not full on like everybody fucks and shares their diseases. And also let's just shoot all this heroin. Like it's not Gigi Allen. Like it's almost like slightly older musicians still trying to find their.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the writer's version of a band that's on the edge.
And they're not too try hardy, which I like, but they're also this group of people that are like, yeah, we're good musicians, we could make it. But also they leave the house, they leave the Springwood, and
guess we're done here.
We're gonna leave this house behind because this is where we started, but now we're done and we're gonna go on tour. But they're touring in a shaggin' wagon.
They sell their two cars and one truck so they can get the shaggin' wagon.
Was there a motorcycle in there too?
Yeah, maybe it's two cars and a motorcycle.
Yeah,
shaggin' wagon.
So they get this shaggin' wagon with a trailer, and basically it's a truck
with a fold-down table.
Our dad used to have it, not a truck, a van. It's like a van. It's probably. Did they talk about what the side of it looks like?
No, not at all.
Does it have a Trojan condoms painted like air sprayed at?
No, there's on it? No naked airbrush on the side. Okay. Our dad's the whole gist of the story is that Ian has a number of these. Where he is getting slightly closer to Freddy Krueger in the dream.
As you do in a Nightmare on Elm Street.
He finally gets a dream in which he meets Freddy Krueger. But he doesn't really believe that he meets Freddy Krueger. And then they go on their trip to Athens. That's it.
Yeah. And there's clues already right off the bat that the other people in the house might be having these dreams and nobody's talking about it.
Luna, at one point, she is stirring in her sleep as Ian is.
He's had his first Freddy nightmare.
After he has had also the most chilled out description of cunnilingus ever, she places her knees on either side of his head and lowers her frame onto him. Like, I was like, okay. Yeah. Like, hey, that's cool.
Tasteful. Yeah. I'm down with this tasteful sex.
But it's also not the only time that especially with Luna, that oral sex comes
Luna,
up.
Well, that's the thing is she's got the, do you remember the necklace?
Yes.
That's what her dream is about.
Yes. So Luna wears this little Luna necklace. It's this moon with a face with a little naked lady sitting in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. That's what she's about, man.
Secret.
I'm about that's what she's about.
Secret. That's how Freddy kills her. He basically becomes the moon.
Yeah, but then the moon turns into one of his claws.
And razors her in half.
Yeah, yeah. She like rides down the claw. And yep, no, it's gross.
It is.
You know what I really love? I love the fact that the author uses that really gross joke that you talk about as a kid, sliding down a razor blade and landing in a lemon juice.
Yep.
Or alcohol, whatever it is.
He also uses this. This is how I know it was a story that I enjoyed reading.
Mm-hmm.
He uses this expression, talks about how the pain explodes like white phosphorus. That description pops out in my head. For all the other words, also Mondo Bizarro, Junk Culture Junkies.
The funny thing is, I want to get to my favorite kill sequence of this story.
Yeah,
I also want to get there
naturally.
In order, yeah.
So they're in the truck in going to Athens, and as they're leaving Nancy's home, 1428 mm-hmm. Elm Street, where they were. They're basically saying, fuck you, this place sucks, we're rolling, we're going to become famous.
They're having a drink, and their neighbor, like, they're sharing a bottle of sangria between them, which is the weirdest choice. And between five people, one bottle of sangria is like having a glass of wine at the most. You don't get
not condoning drinking and driving,
no,
but just
no,
saying
but
that
then
it's
the
like,
like,
it's a strange choice.
Uh-huh. And then the neighbor who hates them is fucking pissed. He's like, hey, you kids, I hope you all die in a car wreck, you drunks.
That's not an exaggeration.
No,
that is.
That's exactly what the dude says.
100%. And Marley turns around and looks at him and says something like, thank you for your well wishes, you old fart. I can't remember what it was. But Ian's response is, I'm so glad that Marley had the ability to express levity at this point, because Ian is a bit of a blowhard. His narration is overblown. He knows a lot. Almost, you can almost feel a little bit of authorial hand in him, because I almost feel like he knows too much about like myths and legends and literature and history to be the character he is. That makes sense. He's a little too deep for a front man of a young shitcore band. I wasn't that deep when I was in a band. You weren't that deep when you were in a band. We thought about deep stuff, but
not deep,
not at the level of controlled narration that this protagonist has. Mm-hmm. So that was one of those things I will say, like, took me out of the text a little bit.
But not too much. Not in a way that you're like, fuck you, man. He goes and they leave, and Ian has like little dreams about Freddy. Like he sees him on the side of the road, that type of thing. So, like waking dreams.
And then has a statement at one point where he's like, you know what, after there's this long moment where he discusses, if we believe enough in something, does it bring it to life? Does that conjure it to existence? And if so, there's a phrase that he says, he conjured it into existence and it finds its way into my mind using the path of least resistance. Being dreams. And it was an amazing phrase talking about the subconscious. Amazing phrase about why he's thinking this. And I love this constant denial and justification that he's doing. Just hide from the truth that, yeah, Freddy Krueger's real. And he fucking kills people in their sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really, I mean, it is like that. I don't want to say flowery language, but like there's this level of flowery language in the book that's refreshing that you can tell. I feel like it's probably like, especially on his own admittance, it feels like it's real, like a real freshman effort by a talented writer who does his best to take a heaping pile of dog shit subject matter and turn it into something that works. Because, I mean, the first Nightmare on Elm Street is a great concept. And it's prolific as far as a horror movie goes. But once you get past the first one, it starts to become, hey, what jokes is Freddy going to tell? And what silly shit's he going to do? And he's just kind of a joke.
Well, and there are plenty of jokes in this.
There are.
Let me tell you.
I mean, he also like doesn't over embrace it. Like you don't get tired of the moments where Freddy appears in the story. You know what's going to happen, but he's not overused to the point where you're like, come on, man.
But descriptions of him are. You notice that like every time, every new character that experiences a nightmare with Freddy, it's almost like the way that I look at my friend Gabe Moncayo, and I look at him and I say, every time I see Gabe Moncayo, my pants begin getting tighter. But it's almost like if I said that every time I saw Gabe Moncayo, it would be like, okay, this gets old even though it's hot, you know?
But you know what's funny about that is I agree with you, except for the fact that it made me think a thing that I've never thought of before.
What's that?
Which was really great. The one description that he keeps using about Freddy is not visual. It's not oral. It's that they can smell the burnt flesh.
Yep.
And it's disgusted, rotted, burnt flesh. And I was like, Wow.
Not an experience you get in the movie.
Yeah, and nobody mentions it ever in any movie. So like that, using that extra descriptor really hits home on this level of the idea that Freddy's very tied to
memories.
And to a certain aesthetic. When Freddy usually takes you to the boiler room at some point in the movie, you know, or that's where you first encounter him. It's like Freddy's basement, Freddy's boiler room, you know, all of that stuff, that it's the look with the chains. And so to then have this description, I'm like, now every time I go back and I watch a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, I'm going to think about the fact that you can smell that gross burnt flesh, and it's a signifier that it's you've reached his part of the dream.
Well, and that's a great point. Like that's the moment at which they begin to realize they're no longer in control of their own imagination, sleeping imagination. But also like I was thinking about that in its connection to memory too, that we always associate odor with memory first and foremost. So only fitting that these nightmares be introduced by the most memorable sense, the sense that we associate most with memory, which I thought was a really unique take on it, the way that you had thought too.
Yeah.
They're going to Athens, and the whole thing is they're on the road to Athens. That's their story does not have the usual Freytag's pyramid. It doesn't have the exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, denouement. It more or less hits the climax.
You said a bunch of words that I don't even know.
You start with the exposition, give you the info, rising action, getting close to the problem, climax, act three of a Shakespeare play, the falling action, things that happen as a result, and then the denouement, which is like, let's sort of end it. Let's get this thing cleared up. We did it! It doesn't have that. It hits the climax, and then it just jumps off the edge. There isn't really a resolution.
No, so, and that's one of the reasons it's such a cool story.
Yeah, can we talk about that?
Do you want to talk about the nightmares and deaths, or do you want to talk about the ending? And
no, let's talk about the nightmares and deaths and how these deaths come about, and then why it's so important they come about, how they do. So they're all in the van driving to Athens. They never get there, by the way.
No. We don't know that they get there.
Right.
So Ian falls asleep at the wheel.
Sorry, some English teacher Dostake says? Well, I might be.
I mean,
might be.
So Ian's fighting with, he knows that he's tired. And like any like idiot in a horror movie, he makes the wrong choice. And he keeps driving, and he doesn't realize that he falls asleep at the wheel, as the title of the story. And one of the first things that happened that I really like is the guitar strings shoot out of the steering wheel indescriptively what is a very Nightmare on Elm Street sounding sequence.
Yes.
This idea of a character being trapped by an inanimate, a sentient inanimate object that happens a bunch of times in Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's specifically high gauge E strings. I remember that too.
Uh-huh.
This is why I know the story stuck with me, because I'm remember this. I didn't write this shit down. They come out and they lash his hands
They wrap his hands around the wheel, his one leg to the seat and his other leg to the gas. And it pulls makes the gas go faster, pulls pulls the vehicle off the road and through a cornfield, which I like because I think that's a, probably like a reference to something else. Like it might even be did Craven do Children of the Corn? Now I gotta look at that real quick.
Hey, horror fans out there, if Wes Craven did Children of the Corn, let us know.
I'm gonna tell you in one.
But also, that it's that threshold.
It's based off of Stephen King. Okay. But it's to see who directed it.
That threshold into that supposed underworld, like because they do talk about. Dollstake said Stephen King. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you, because I honestly don't know. I've never seen Children of the Corn. They do talk about leaving suburbia, and they're leaving suburbia, and he falls asleep. So that cornfield is that threshold to that underworld, because there's always there's always that journey to the underworld in every story that we experience, right?
Yeah.
And so that cornfield is that. Now, mind you, Ian isn't scared, even though he falls asleep. You remember why?
Because he can control his dreams.
And he's sleeping.
And he doesn't believe. Yeah, right.
And so he says, I guess I'm sleep driving.
I thought he was scared, but he was like, I can do this. I can handle this. Like, I can get out of this situation because I'm asleep, but I can save us. I just got to get myself, like, I got to keep things on the road long enough to wake the fuck back up and tell myself to wake up.
And now that we're talking about it, I am further being driven to the belief that he is an absolute fucking snake oil salesman himself.
Okay, yeah.
Like, that he is constantly just like, oh, yeah, I could, no problem. Oh, pff, I did not, Freddy's not real. I'm not asleep. I can sleep walk.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely an unreliable narrator, which is cool for a story like this.
Also, Dollstake, fuck off. I haven't seen Children of the Corn.
So,
Sorry.
Earlier in the story, we pass a drive-in movie theater. And Ian begs everyone to stay because he's a film buff. And they're like, no, fuck off, dude. And they're like, also, you're a fucking film-like snob. Why do you like drive-in movie theaters? And Ian says, I like them because of the memories, because they're like this great summer thing it's just like the summer playground, and you drive in with your friends and you watch a movie and you create mayhem and you screw around, and it's this dying piece of Americana. And everybody knows what a drive-in movie theater looks like, but not a lot of us have them anymore. And it's really funny that he talks about it like that, because in the idea of the lost piece of Americana. So Freddie takes him into a ruined, in the dream, takes him into a ruined drive-in movie theater. And it reminds me of the Big M up the street,
well,
man.
We also have, I was thinking of both of us in the process of reading this too, because we did grow up not far from a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
That only, I would say, in the past 15 years fell into ruin.
Yeah.
But also, I currently live 5 minutes from one of the last drive-in movie theaters in America.
Yeah.
Which is Benji's Drive-In. I've never gone, but it is still...
I've gone once, and the other thing about it is, as this, quote, dying piece of Americana, it's actually not... It's not the same experience it was when you were a kid.
Sure.
And you go there on a summer night, and you're sweating, and you're not allowed to turn on the car... And so you turn your radio on, because now we don't use the little in the window speakers. You turn the radio on.
Fucking and battery dies.
Yeah. Last time I went to see a movie, my fucking battery started dying, and I was like, shit, got to start my car. And then the usher comes over and he's like, you got to turn your car off.
Dude,
like,
this Americana can't turn your car on.
Bro, my shit's going to die.
Dude, if I wanted to come here and have a bad experience, I would have just gone to my dad's house. So when I came to the Big M. Dollstake says Fritz Kirsch was the director of Children of the Corn. Cool. Not familiar with the name. I honestly don't know. Also, fuck on, I get better results as opposed to fucking off. Completely true. And you read a Nightmare on Elm Street book, but you didn't watch Children of the Corn, and I assume read it. And that's weird. So eat my ass.
and then Wolf says that he saw Serpent in the Rainbow at the Big M. Which is another.
I saw Spirit the Stallion of the fucking Deeps or whatever it's called.
I saw my favorite movie of all time. Do you remember what the double feature was that I saw?
Didn't you see? Let me take a guess. Was it Tron?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of one of two movies, and I don't think one of them is the case. Snow White?
It was Tron and Snow White.
What
Disney
a fucking
feature.
Weird collection. Weird.
You want to know what the other weird double feature that I saw there was that I remember?
What's that?
The Black Hole and...
Forbidden Planet?
No,
Forbidden Planet.
Oh my God, Forbidden
Planet. Forbidden Planet.
Fucking Forbidden Planet. Sheena of the Jungle.
Oh, I bet that was garbage.
Dude, it was if anybody even remembers that fucking movie, it was a sexy Tarzan lady in in like sexy skins running around. It was not great. And so, of course, Dad was probably sitting in the front seat telling Mom to jerk him off while we were in the back seat.
It's a minder.
It was a perfect double feature for horny old dads, because the way it worked was you go in and you watch Black Hole, which puts you right the fuck to sleep mm-hmm. as a child. And then your parents sit those 2 hours through that. And then your dad leans over to your mom. He's like, hey, reach in my pants. I got something for you. And she fucking jerks him off in his pants. And then everybody goes home happy and then dad tells mom to wash his underwear tomorrow.
Hey, well, so anyway, we book club. Guess I'll see you guys on next Monday.
One of these days, I want to do exactly that. Have one of those terrible stories.
just end it. Just cut it. Just uh-huh. finish it. Arsenic says, I remember seeing Deadly Blessings at a drive-in when I was 4, maybe. Yeah, I think that is so intriguing that. It is seated. The story is seated so well in your own personal memory.
Mm-hmm.
Ian is brought to this nightmare drive-in
mm-hmm.
where he is then forced to observe the nightmarish deaths as a drive-in film of mm-hmm. all of his friends that are in the truck with him.
Yes.
It is an awesome conceit. And the minute that started happening, I saw this go from a cheesy, enjoyably crude, but also talented story to when I was like, there's style and form here. There is an intent, like to break expected form. Like, this is a great short story. So then we get this narration that is him watching all 4 reels, reel 1, reel 2, reel 3, reel 4. Which mm-hmm. our 80s slasher librarian happily does his own best Freddy reel 1, reel 2, and then like puts the Freddy lap. And each one is their death. And the first one is Rowan?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's my favorite one. That's that one.
Which one was Rowan? I forget.
Rowan is in the, he wakes up in the van by himself. And he's like, where the fuck is everybody? They must have all gone to take a piss or have a smoke without me or something.
They went to take a piss without me?
Yeah. Remember. Fucking assholes left me to sleep in the van. So
and he wakes up in these leather pants that are mm-hmm. stuck to him like a plastic bag. And yeah. I know that fucking feeling. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, God damn it, man. You fucking assholes. So he wakes up and he's waiting for everybody. And he's like, I'll turn the car on and I'll listen to a goddamn tape. So he pulls out a tape. I don't think he says, does he say what tape it is? Because I don't think he does.
I don't recall.
And he goes to put the tape in, and it snaps in into the old – and this is the part that gets me. You can see it. And in my head, it's the sideways feed tape insert.
That you can see the 2 little, like, pins that
yep.
that will drop down into it. Yep.
Yep. So you push it in. It's got the little window that flips up, or the little door that flips up. Put it in, and it takes the tape in. And then it goes to start, and then just nothing happens. So he's like, what the fuck? I guess I got to reach in and, like, fiddle with the fucking tape. So he puts his fucking hand in, and the goddamn fucking tape machine, it fucking catches his hand, gets caught in his finger. He puts his finger in, and then it gets caught, and then the rest of them go in, and it fucking eventually pulls all of them in through the fucking tape deck and grinds him up. And his fucking meat comes out of the speakers like a goddamn meat grinder. And it's so awesome because it feeds into a fear that everyone has had if you've ever owned a tape deck.
Yep. Getting your hand caught, right? It's the M1.
Because I've done it.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah, I've gotten my fucking fat fingers caught in a tape deck in a car.
It's the M1 thumb fear. It is the tie uh-huh. and the meat grinder fear. Yep. The hand of the wood chipper fear. But I also like that when he comes out of the speakers, because you remember what Rowan busts Ian's balls about?
I don't. Tell me, please.
He says, Ian earlier says, this stood out to me, and I thought it was just fucking brilliant writing because uh-huh. it was subtle. Rowan busts Ian's balls because he says to Ian on the drive when they pass by a drive-in, and Ian's like, oh, guys, I want to go there. And Rowan's like, dude, you're a guy who loves like high fidelity sound.
Yeah.
And you think getting sound out of 3-inch speakers is good.
Right.
And so,
okay.
of course, he comes out like meat from the inside of these speakers. Like,
because he's fucking obsessed with like quality sound,
yeah,
too.
Like,
yeah,
oh, like, so good. And, of course, Freddy's like, you know, I'm going to rewind your ass or whatever he says. I don't know.
It's awesome. It is so, and it's so vivid and simple. Yeah. It's a simple, like, death that's not overdone, which is really great for a story, a short story, because you're listening to it, you can imagine everything that's happening. He talks about the machinery, like, grinding him up, and you can imagine in the way he talks about some of the, like, metal pieces catching him, that some of that might be Freddy's claws grabbing him and pulling him into it as well. Yeah.
And it also plays on a lot of these characters' fears, too. I remember one of the first dreams that Ian has before all this stuff happens is Freddy finds him in a dream and takes his own claw with himself, stabs through his hand and down. And he says, Ian says in his narration that it's a stigmata that is an absolute career ender for guitarists. Yeah. And I was like, wow, like, that's such a fucking great description.
Yeah.
The second death is Pamela, I believe, right?
I think, yeah, it's either Pam. Yes, I think it's Pamela is second.
Which I think compared to the others is a bit forgettable.
I don't. Yeah, she. Wait. Oh, yes. Okay. She turns. She has. She picks up Jim Morrison on the side of the road,
yes,
right?
And she in her dream is narrating about how she is the reincarnated Pamela that was with, you know, was with Jim Morrison. And that the Doors needed a bassist, and Pamela just happens to be the bassist of the band. So it's feeding into these desires that she has to be, like, with Jim Morrison. Jim Morrison, like, they listen to Riders on the Storm. Really cool references to the song within it lyrically. Mm-hmm. And he kisses Jim Morrison, and, like, he rots and then slices her in the belly and...
It turns into Freddy, yeah, and he cuts her open.
It was the one that where Brian Hodge must have felt he was like, man, I don't fucking know.
It's the one that feels the most mailed in, because you kind of go, what do I do as far as Jim Morrison? Like, what do I do? I want Jim Morrison in the story as part of the dream. And you just kind of go, all right, I guess Freddy's going to slice her tummy open.
And I do like that he describes Jim Morrison as looking androgynous. That stuck out to me, because Jim Morrison was a very androgynous look. So Pamela dies like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Luna.
I think Luna's next. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And Luna. Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, we talked a little bit about Luna before. Yeah. Like,
I mean, she's riding the moon. She's getting giving mustache rides to the moon, or the moon's giving her mustache ride. Yeah. How would you phrase that? Mustache rides for 5 cents.
I don't know.
Either way, the moon probably doesn't have a mustache. Every time I see it, it's bald.
The moon turns into a razor blade, and credit cards are ass. And slices her from crotch to throat.
Yep.
And
that's, she doesn't know whether she's going to land in alcohol, because she's dead by that point.
Yeah.
And then the last one's Marley.
Yeah.
Marley.
And I remember
Marley's
well.
Is fun, because Marley's is like, definitely like leans into that whole, I like how he starts each of them also. Like, well, he starts the other three as these fantasies. Rowan's isn't really a fantasy, but the other three kind of start as a, like, he sort of like gets everybody's guard down. So he's like, Marley's famous. He's a famous musician, and he's successful, and he's going to a record signing, and he's also like, hey, the owner of the record store is like, only two albums per customer, and he goes, fuck that, man.
Bing, let me get fuck rid of this rules. Sign. I'm a fucking rebel, baby.
Yeah,
rules are for babies and turds, and I don't fuck with rules. If you're a punk, if you're a fucking punk and you like punk music, if you fucking love being against rules, then come with me, because Mondo Bizarro Junk Culture Junkies, the Cramps, and the fucking Chainsaw Whiz Pops, we're going to come down to your house. We're going to fucking rebel it out.
None of that corporate beat.
I wish I had those sounds up. Also, I'm happy that Doll's taking the chat. It was like credit cards. Because that is that just because Luna gets credit carded along the moon.
And so he, like, his is a little more hands-on-y and elaborate as far as a death. Like, Freddie basically throws him across the fucking record store. He's the second like person to sign a book, and it just turns out he's like Freddie or an album cover. So he throws him up against the wall. The records on the wall start melting
onto him like a fucking like a gold helmet from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and they trap him in place. And so he's basically crucified onto the wall with like melted vinyl, which is an interesting statement.
Don't fuck with that shit because I was listening, I was like, no, I don't like that vinyl.
But also the statement that he's crucified him on the wall, yes, that this fucking guy is like, you know, his art, he's dying with his art.
Well, and the funny thing is too, is the beginning of that whole thing, he talks about how Marley in his head is self-narrating about like, Made it without selling out.
Yeah.
Like, I made it to the top of the charts without selling out because I'm not a fucking corporate turd.
Also, Marley was the asshole who in their house had like busts of Beethoven and stuff. He was real fucking Schroeder.
So he gets him crucified. Mm-hmm. He was a real Schroeder. And Freddie goes up and slices his belly open. Mm-hmm. And instead of intestines coming out, it's a bunch of old audio tape that specifically Freddie is like, it's audio, it's studio quality audio tape.
and then he pulls it and he's slicing it and he pulls it and he pulls out and eventually just pulls it until like his insides come out, right?
Yes, it's left pretty he says that eventually he pulled enough until he got to the beat of the song and then that part of the story is done. So just like he just pulls him inside out like a slug with salt on it. And then we get to so all of his friends have been dream killed.
Yeah.
And then we have Ian. And this is where we got to talk. Because I got to be honest with you, I'm still up in the air about what happened. And it's so interpretable. And I just got to talk to somebody about it now.
I definitely agree, man. Like, it was, I've never had on this podcast a story where it was done and I went, I'm going to try to interpret this. And I don't mean it was like for a few seconds, I was actually a little bit pissed. And I was like, I think he's left this too open to interpretation. He very clearly tells you what happens, but also goes, because Ian is an unreliable narrator,
right?
I don't know.
So Ian,
I think that's the biggest thing about it. Like, I know what happened, but I think because of the talent that has gone into writing the story and the fact that you've spent all these clues in making Ian unreliable, I'm not sure.
And it's also, it plays with the definition of what a dream. And so one of the things that I really, really liked, the word that was popping into my head as I was reading this was pilgrimage. These characters are constantly taking pilgrimages places of value, personal value for them. Mm-hmm. They start, they start living in Nancy Thompson's home. That is a place of value and pilgrimage to them. It is a place of honor. It's like a Mecca. And they talk about going to Athens, Georgia, because like the alternative music Mecca.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they leave one Mecca that no longer satisfies them, and they make a great pilgrimage to another Mecca, which is Athens, Georgia. And that's this. So it's this. But it's also a pilgrimage, not just through their own dreams, but also for their own dreams. This is their dream, is to become a famous band. Mm-hmm. And the story ends with Ian awakening at the steering wheel, realizing that he's in the other lane, twists it, gets back in the lane, sees that his friends are stirring a little bit, but not awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? Do you remember?
He has a flashback. He has a flashback to his first dream in the story where he apparently has blacked out after the first dream. And apparently Freddie had gotten him in the very first dream and he's been sleepwalking the whole time.
Yep.
He's been sleepwalking the entire story.
And that was the tool by which Freddie used his lack of belief in Freddie to like get closer to his friends.
Yeah.
And then when he wakes up, so he actually wakes up in that moment, mm-hmm. only to find the rotting corpses of friends in the truck.
Yeah.
With him, right? Like I'm trying to keep it all together.
But they're all alive. They're not. They're dead. But they all wake up, and basically, it's like I get this feeling that it's like this ticking time bomb, and they're like, including him, they're all dead, and that they have a limited amount of time before they actually just fall dead as corpses, and none of them know when. But like, he talks about Rowan starting to bloat,
yeah,
and that they all stopped looking at each other, and all they wanted to do was make it to Athens, Georgia, before they just stopped.
They had
being
400 miles, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, like, I can't say. I almost want to ask, like, I want to ask Brian Hodge what the like what his idea was here, because I mm-hmm. didn't find it was very clear, and I didn't need it here.
Right.
What it
right.
did for me is it defines it's the it was a living nightmare. It was
yeah.
it was. It's one thing to kill somebody in their dreams, but it's another thing to let them wake up and know that they're living the rest of their time, however long it might be, in an absolute fucking nightmare, even as they're going towards that thing that is their paradise, even if they're mm-hmm. going towards that one thing they've always dreamed about, that too can be a nightmare. That's actually a really fucking terrifying idea as an adult.
And yeah, and also the other thing, I mean, and in talking about the interpretability of the story.
I think so. I don't know.
That maybe they didn't wake up. Maybe this is Ian's nightmare.
Yeah.
And that we're actually not, he hasn't woken up. And this is the way that Freddy tortures him, because Freddy wants him. I feel like Freddy gets power off of, like, it's like killing is sort of like this climax for him. It's like coming.
I'm Freddy Krueger, and I'm gonna come in my pants.
I don't know. I don't even remember. It's been so long since I've seen a Freddy movie that I can't remember Robert Englund's voice.
But he gets power from the fear that he invokes in people. So keeping somebody, that's why he plays with people so long.
Yeah.
You know, and actually makes them afraid of him, because if people aren't afraid of him, like in fucking Freddy versus Jason, whether or not that's a bad movie, I'm not going to talk about
it. Oh, it's
100% right now.
A bad movie. It's absolutely a bad movie.
But it's also still a fun movie. Got your nose.
I'm going to credit card your ass.
And there was plenty of, like, the Freddyisms in this. There is, you know, he did exactly what I need. What is the one thing you need, Bob, out of a Freddy quip? Like, somewhere in a fucking Freddy movie, what do you need? There's one thing you need in a Freddy quip, even if you don't realize you need it.
Is it?
And in the chat, if you know what that thing is, just pop it right in there, because everybody who's watched knows there's got to be fucking something. This has got to be in one.
He's got to say the word bitch.
Yes, he's got to say
the word
bitch. Yeah,
he's got to say the word bitch somewhere.
At one point, he does say something about, like, don't stop shaking around like a bitch.
Yeah, it's when he's talking to Paula, right? Or Pamela? What was her name again? Paula?
Pamela.
Pamela. Yeah.
Pamela. Yeah.
He's talking to Pamela.
And the puns are everywhere.
There's definitely puns.
And they're not good either.
No, but I think they're not good on purpose.
Yeah.
I think that Hodge knows exactly what he's writing here, and knows that he's got leeway to add some trash to it. You know, like, first of all, you don't end up writing a Nightmare on Elm Street story if you're not, like, sort of a fan of the series, a little bit, knowing enough about it, because you got to know enough about the mythology and how it works and get that tone. And he gets the tone of Friday or Nightmare on Elm Street really well. He gets the comedic tone of stuff, but he also leans back towards the darker things. Like, Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one, isn't the same tone of movie that 2 and Beyond are. Freddy's more serious and scary.
I love, and I think I have this kind of
mm-hmm.
When I think about some of my favorite horror movies, they are those fledgling attempts at actually scary before they get campy. You know, we've said before, like, mm-hmm. I love the first Evil Dead. I know you and I have said that.
Yeah.
And I actually love the first Evil Dead, despite the fact that it almost possesses none of the staples that we come to associate with Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And then I love the first Freddy movie. It is the only one that I can remember. And that scene with Johnny Depp falling asleep with the TV on his stomach has literally shaped the terrors of my adulthood.
Yeah, no, that's the fucking reason that you hate the end of a broadcast day.
I can't fucking handle the end of a broadcast day. And you mm-hmm. know what this dumb asshole does? now and then when he wants to feel a little something in his body, I will watch videos of that shit. And I will purposely force myself to get scared.
Yeah. And it's awesome.
But
man.
I can control
it. It's a good exercise.
But I can control that, right?
You can't control it, dude.
Just
you're
like
a big
Ian.
Fucking Ian.
It's like Ian. Yeah, so like... yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to walk on that.
No, you didn't. That's it. It was for the first time I can actually say that other than maybe the kids book, the Warhammer kids book that we read, this story was a romp and a stomp in the manner of it did exactly what it advertised. It felt how it should. And it's hard. We're sitting here talking about it because there's not that many jokes you can make about the fucking story when it works right.
And there is also, though, a value to it in altering the perception of how Freddy is seen within that world.
Mm-hmm.
Where they said it at the beginning, where it says that Freddy is a tool by which parents can justify their neglect and the world can turn its head away from responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
I was
the kids can use it as a different excuse. Yeah,
I was blown away. Like that, mm-hmm. that the parents can.
He was the best and worst thing that ever happened to the parents and children of Spring.
Yeah. You know, that if a child died, blamed it on Freddy Krueger. You didn't blame it on why the child died. You blamed on Freddy Krueger if the kid hanged himself.
Yep.
If a kid died in a car accident, you blame these things on Freddy Krueger. And I was like, wow, what a vast permission for irresponsibility and neglect mm-hmm. in an entire town. And it really fascinated me because it is this morally gray area that I shouldn't think that Freddy Krueger can actually demonstrate lessons in a society, but he fucking did.
And I have to go back to something. I have to go back to something in the story that I just made a fucking realization. There's a statement at one point when somewhere in the story, you get this hint where Ian talks about that Nancy told him, don't go. And in the beginning, he thinks she's saying, don't go into the basement. And that's why he's like, you know, I'm not fucking afraid, Freddy, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then later he makes this realization that maybe she's saying, don't go as in don't leave the house.
Yes.
She's never saying it to him to save him. She's saying it because if he leaves, he dooms his friends.
Yeah.
She's not trying to save Ian. She was Ian was already doomed from the moment they're having the conversation because he's in the Freddy dream already.
Yeah.
Like he's dead from that first dream.
Even if his death is a slow burn. Like he's not gonna die just because Freddy sliced him apart. He is the time bomb is going.
And if he leaves and takes his friends with him, then his friends die too.
Yep. Yep. And they do.
Yeah.
As a result of him. I like it that this felt like one of the first times that a slasher movie based thing gave me a chance to think about commentary in slasher movies.
Mm-hmm.
There is commentary in slasher movies. There's commentary in horror. I mean, we look back to Night of the Living Dead. There is commentary in Night of the Living Dead, and you know that well. You know that better than anybody else that I know.
And the best part about that commentary is much like a lot of other things. Sometimes it's unintentional. There's definitely intended commentary in Night of the Living Dead, but there's also inferred commentary that was never intended, but that we as a society look at it and we mirror ourselves in what we watch sometimes. And that... you know, people talk about the cliche of life imitating art, but sometimes also art informs life and vice versa. Like it doesn't necessarily imitate it, but it informs it and informs your views on it.
Yeah.
And I think that this story does a great job of taking this as a vehicle to sort of not even necessarily make bold statements. It's not like sending, I mean, there's messages in it.
It's the power
but
of
it's subtle.
It's the power of myth, right? We talk about how there is a difference in a legend and a myth. So if we look at the folklore of those, that myth exists in this place.
To be busted.
Myth exists to be busted. Myth exists in this place where it explains. I'm trying to think the right way to it explains actual. It explains factual details. Explains real phenomena with great stories, basically. Like,
yeah.
And in a way, that's what this is. It is the tightest bit of myth for Freddy Krueger, because he serves a certain purpose in society. Not to like, not punishing people. I don't give a fuck about that. That's one of the things I actually like about Freddy, is Freddy just fucking kills, and these characters don't need to be punished. There is no morality there. There's no morality balance. It is a matter of Freddy's a fucking terrible dude doing terrible shit.
Yeah.
But what it's highlighting is just also how people take these ideas and they see themselves with them, and they boot their own belief systems with them, and that this town is no longer really responsible for children. It's no longer responsible for feeling responsible for children.
Yeah, it's really cool as far as like this statement that just says, man, like look at what your kids are doing, pay attention to it. And it's not because your kids are doing something wrong, because like maybe you're doing something wrong by not paying attention to them. And that's like, I don't know, man. Like I'm sort of happy and shocked and a little like weirded out by the fact that
there's a lot to be said for this story. Yeah. Evan Flight, thank you so much, by the way, for that subscription for the Quarantine Book Club. I really appreciate you. The other thing that I wanted to end with is this interesting acknowledgement of mental health and mental struggles that I would not have expected from them. And it's not like punch you in the face with like, you know, identify that people go through mental health struggles. It's a little more subtle and a little more 90s in the sense that at one point, the band is talking about they write a song that deals with suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And they specifically talk about they don't, it's not dealt with humorously. And one of the managers at like a bar they go to is like, I don't want to fucking hear, don't play that suicide song in here, because I don't want that shit. I don't want to be responsible for it. The band's like, you're not responsible for it. It's just like fucking write a song about it because it's fucking important.
We're like, we're playing, and dude, if you don't fucking like it, I don't care.
And
like,
they play it anyway, which I just think is neat. It's these characters that recognizing that a little something more to that idea than just the fear of it within the society. I thought it was cool. I thought Brian Hodge did an awesome job of this. And I believe the 80s slash a librarian at the end of his own narration of this story says that it is favorite among the stories.
Yeah. And dude, I got to also talk about that dude for a minute. It just in closing, that I have been super impressed at the prolific level of work that he has on this this site, on his channel. We discussed the fact that, like, you know, he's got a Patreon. Like if you're into horror, listen to the site, man. The channel, it's cool. Like I was joking last week about how I wanted to go back and continue listening to these Friday the 13th stories, and that there was sort of like this weird Eric Morse rabbit hole to go down, which Rance and I talked about after the episode. Like throughout the week, we were like finding out more things about Eric Morse, and that series that continues on in the same world, and that it's all copycat murders until the last one that Eric Morse has written and self-published, which combines one of my favorite Friday the 13th properties, which is the stupid fucking television show,
with the actual
universe. And he's done a thing that is like sort of this fan fiction holy grail for Friday the 13th. So I kind of want to get that far into it. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think that the Slasher Librarian might have read it, but I don't know. I just haven't dug deep enough into his library. But I mean, next week's book is going to be one of his as well.
So let's talk about the next week's book, because we're just about to wrap up here. So let's talk about next week's book, and then we will get to the usual thing that we do here when we record on Twitch, which
made somebody. So next week's book, I'm putting it in the chat. It is the Halloween Young Adult series, because I'm really into these like YA books for the slashers genre. I find them hilarious. It is Halloween number one, The Scream Factory by Kelly O'Rourke. And dude, because if we're going into the week of Halloween,
we better read Halloween.
Yep. And so I just figured these are like really basically the big three if you're going into horror anyway.
Absolutely.
So let's read a Halloween story. It's the link is in the description or in the chat. And
please feel free to I tell you what, I'm gonna also toss this out there too. I was thinking about this.
Uh-huh.
I want to see if we can get the 80s slash library.
Okay.
But if we can't, and anybody happens to read this story and would like to join us on the Quarantine Book Club next week, no. Why not? Yeah. Any of our friends. You mm-hmm. want to join us? Arsenic, Mick Arcade, Evan Flight, Dollstake. If you guys want to join us on the podcast next week, let me know.
I'm hoping that it'll be trash.
Yeah.
It's gonna be 4 hours. It's gonna be four, like it's about a 4 hour book. This one was a short story, so it was much shorter. But let's face it, 4 hours riding back and forth to work over the week. I can do that in like 2-3 days.
Yeah.
Mostly because I drive a fairly long distance to work and I'll fucking listen to it at work. I don't care. I don't care that little kids can walk by my door and hear me listening to people say the F word.
The F word. Dab. You hear the 80s slash librarian go superfluous.
Is that them?
That's actually, I will say it. I'm giving love to the 80s slash librarian. Mm-hmm. There are times where when he'll narrate and narrate and he will slightly mispronounce a word. And I'm like, I love that he's just going for it. And I'm like,
man, I would have needed to stop.
Yeah. But also, dude goes through a ton of content.
And that's exactly like, it. He's just putting it up there. I'd rather it all fades out of my brain. These aren't criticisms of it. The fact is he's making out of print shit available for people. And he is a good reader and he does a damn good job at making these productions as good as they can be without overwhelming with unnecessary sound. And I really do appreciate that.
And he does you ever try to read a book or a copy? As a former radio person and a person who has to read copy every once in a while, holy crap, man. Like, I can't tell you how many times when I was, like, having to record shit that I just will have to read something 40 times. Because I can't say a simple sentence without stuttering over my own words. And so to, like, read an entire book in what I assume is, like, exceptionally long settings. He's got to be doing, like, a chapter at a time. Because there's also this amazing thing, which I can't say for, some of the audiobooks that I've listened to on Audible lately from some of my favorite people. I don't hear the production on his. Like, I can listen to James Marsters reading a book, who I love you, James. But I can hear you read Dresden and go, oh, this is where I had to stop and do another take.
Yes, absolutely.
I can hear the physical change in your voice between one sentence and the other. And I've not heard that once with this dude.
Is it like the part where James Marsters accidentally reads wrong in the fourth Dresden book?
She's got him by the back. By the back of the throat?
Oh.
Well, that's gone now, too. Like, yeah. It's no longer in the version that's out there.
Well, Bob, I really enjoyed this book. I am looking forward to Halloween. This was it was nice and refreshing to be able to read something that I truly legitimately enjoyed. And then I didn't feel went in too many awful places, stuck to its roots, but also added something new in. So I'm going to say like 8 out of 10 on this, baby. 8 out of 10. Like,
and we got, is that the highest score so far?
I think so. Like I would put it comparable with the Warhammer for Kids book. Like,
yeah. And let's face it, since this is a more adult, like this actually, it wasn't a young adult book. This is like a grown-ups book. So I mean, it's a little bit easier writing for kids, I think, than it is for adults. Yep. So I got to say, that I think it's the best book that we have read on the podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Next week, I hope we'll go back to our normal rife of shit so we can make some fucking jokes.
we actually got a fucking chance to pick this apart.
Yeah, it was cool. So. And it was also, you know, we've talked about it as long as the book was.
You're right. You're absolutely
because
right.
The book was less than an hour and a half long.
And I think with some dedicated focus into specific areas, the book actually have spoken well about
it. Yeah.
With the text to be analyzed in front of us for a while. So do you have any shout outs you want to make? Or are you good to go?
Just want to say you can find us on our website at www.thequarantinebookclub.com. Don't forget the or you'll end up on a different website. Follow us on Instagram at the Quarantine Book Club Podcast. Our Facebook group is at the Quarantine Book Club. You can obviously find Rants here on Twitch/violence obscene, Twitch.tv/violence obscene. You can find me on my Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/bobdesign. I paint minis on Wednesday and work out on Saturdays. Rants plays games on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then on Sundays plays games with our friend Shawnee on Twoism.
Yeah, you did it for me. So.
Hey, man. Make sure you find this on Audio Boom, Apple, or wherever you find great podcasts. Now we're on Amazon as well. So thanks, Jeff Bezos. Hey, Alexa, could you find the Quarantine Book Club podcast for me?
I couldn't find Quarantine Book
Club. Well,
hey, I'm Bob.
And I'm Rance.
And this has been the Quarantine Book Club.
And you know what? Y'all can eat a big bag of...